Maybe spiritual pursuits are just as important as material pursuits. And maybe success isn't only measured by what kind of job you have or how much you earn.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. elmad.pardes.org.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the third installment of This Pardes Life with Zvi Hirschfeld. Today, we're going to look at Torah study. We've looked at Jewish peoplehood and its importance in terms of building a better world. We've looked at the whole issue of halakha, Jewish law, and how Jewish law can be used to build a better society. And traditionally, if you ask many people, how do we get to this peoplehood and how do we get to this halakha, it'll be by learning, by studying. And that's what I'm going to be discussing with Zvi today. And Zvi, maybe we'll just go to the heart of the issue by me telling you my December dilemma, which comes up nearly every year. And it's not about whether to have a Yule log or a Christmas tree in my house. But round about December every year, I say to myself, what am I doing with my life? After I've met my students and I like them and we've gotten used to being with each other, what am I doing with my life? I am spending my life helping middle-class people who basically have really good lives to have even more meaning in their lives. And I'm not saying this just as it's a real question that I feel every time. What would you say to somebody like me?
I would say to somebody like you that if all you were doing was a personal growth program for privileged kids, then I understand your dilemma. But I don't think you are. I think you are trying to make a case to young Jews who today could choose to participate in any community, in any environment they want. You are trying to make a case to them that Judaism and the Jewish people is where they should invest their energy, their creativity, their passion, and that's going to be have the most impact on the world. And you're making that case by showing them, look at the wisdom that Torah brings. Look at the way it has inspired and held together Jews for centuries. There is something here. There is a blueprint here that if we learn how to use it and apply it and think about it creatively, the Jewish people can do their mission.
Yeah, but does it work? Does it actually work?
Well, sometimes I say to myself, how are we ever going to know? Am I going to live long enough to see the fruits of my labor? But I think that we can look backwards and see that it worked. I mean, what held the Jewish people together for centuries? What made them feel connected to each other? Why is it a Jew living in who knows where in Russia would feel connected to a Jew living in North Africa? What was the glue that connected them and combined them? I would say one of, if not the most important thing, they studied the same Torah. They read the same Torah every Shabbat. They had the same set of Talmud on the shelf. I think this has been the structure, the framework, the connective tissue that has held the Jewish people together, and I think it will continue to be so.
There are some people who would say it was anti-Semitism or a fate from the outside. But leaving that aside for the moment, and you've said very beautifully what the role that Torah played for people in the past. What about today? Today, it often seems as if the Torah and differing interpretations or ignorance or ignoring of the Torah has got more to separate Jews and divide them than actually bring people together. Is Torah a unifying or divisive force for the Jewish people today or for the future?
I think it all depends on how we want to use it. I think if we believe there's one right way to understand and apply the Torah today, then you're right. Nothing can be more divisive because each group is going to stand and plant their flag on the ground and say, this is what Torah should be. Everybody else, you're out of the equation, you're wrong, and you're destructive. But if we believe, like the Zohar suggests, that the Torah is this diamond and that everybody is seeing a different facet, then I think we could argue the exact opposite. It's precisely the diversity and difference and multiplicity of views out there that's going to give Torah the greatest power we could possibly see.
Could you share with us times in your life where you've really seen the diamond glistening?
Wow, the metaphor sounded very beautiful when you said it. I think one example that comes to mind is I took a trip with Pardes to Poland, and we were at the Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin, where that's where Rav Shapira launched Daf Yomi. And he launched it about, 7-8 years before the Shoah. And it occurred to me, sitting in that Beit Midrash, I'm also studying those same texts. His story didn't stop. It's continuing with me and with the students who are there, because I taught a page of that Talmud to the students who were with me. And it occurred to me in that moment, look at the power of this book. And it was not a deep, deep discussion. It was probably about lost objects. And yet there it was, this discussion about details, about a string of fish, and where, and do you have to return it or can you keep it, had crossed time and space to connect us, all of whom were North Americans who were studying at Pardes in Poland with ancestors from hundreds of years previously.
It's interesting you're speaking about North Americans, and I'm thinking of a Pardes group, which is often very diverse. Do you think Pardes is an appropriate place to study Torah with so many people who might have very, very different views about the Torah's origin, people who might be looking at it academically? What value do you think there is in studying Torah in a place like Pardes?
Well, again, I think it comes back to the question, should Torah only be studied in environments where everybody agrees and thinks the same way? That's where I came from. Yeshiva was very much like that, where everyone had the same assumptions about the validity of the text, the authority of the text, the meaning of the text, but that doesn't address the Jewish people. That would be great if Torah only belonged to 5 or 10% of the Jewish people. But if we think that Torah belongs to the entire Jewish people, then the Pardes Beit Midrash, I think, more than any other, reflects that reality and gives me great hope that in spite of all these great differences between us, Torah is something that can connect us and bring us together and be a platform for us to create something together, even though we are very different. And I would say often at Pardes, our diversity is our strength. We learn more because there are always people around us to challenge us, to question us, and to show us how you could think differently.
Can you give an example of that, where you learned something and where it actually happened?
So I'll give you the example. When I first came to Pardes and I was teaching Talmud, and I was very young back then, I was 33 years old. I was a kid, a child. And I remember the first time Pardes students referred to rabbis by their first name, you know, Gamliel or Akiva. And in the first, I was like, stunned. Who speaks like this in this way about our venerated sages? But I realized it opened something up because for them, they weren't in such awe and fear of these great sages. They weren't afraid to question. They weren't afraid to say, well, I don't think that makes sense, or I wouldn't have said it that way, or I think there's a better way to look at it. And I realized that their perspective of not being in awe opened up whole new ways to challenge and think critically and even more creatively than I was able to, because I was locked into my, you have to have fear and respect for everybody that came before me.
You've made a really good case for why we as the Jewish people who are in this endeavor would like more and more people to be studying Torah. But let's say I'm a young person from Generation Y. I'm thinking of spending a summer at Pardes. I'm thinking of spending a year at Pardes. I have some Jewish affiliation. It's somewhat important to me. What might you say to you? You know, you solved my problem so nicely as a teacher. Now solve my problems in a Generation Y-er.
I think everybody from Generation Y, I'm not 100% sure I know who that is, but I think I know who that is, they're going to be Jews by choice. They're going to have to choose to be a part of this. What's going to motivate that? In other words, anti-Semitism isn't going to motivate them. They're not going to be motivated because they grew up in a Yiddish-speaking home or because of the only foods they've ever eaten is kosher food. They are going to have to choose Jewish life because they find it meaningful and inspiring. And I can't imagine that any Jew, especially Jews today who are so educated and so sophisticated about so many things, are going to be able to develop a passionate, engaged, and sophisticated take on their religious and cultural identity without the texts of our tradition that bring all of that out. So I would say to that young person, if you want to have a meaningful Jewish choice, you need to access this wisdom and become a part of it.
And I realize that I, and maybe we, many of us, have a skewed version of what's going on in the Jewish world. But for me, it sometimes seems as if we have, on the one hand, groups of people who spend multiple years, even lifetimes, studying Torah versus other people who do not show that same commitment and will spend shorter periods, or most of the Jewish people, no time at all. And I realize that this is an exaggerated and skewed perspective. I'm interested how you feel about the group of people who spend multiple years, sometimes entire lifetimes, studying Torah. In what way is that an ideal for you?
So look, on the one hand, I look at the ultra-Orthodox yeshiva world, and sometimes I'm jealous, or certainly impressed. Look at the commitment. Look at their complete and total investment in Torah study as a way of life and a complete occupation and complete devotion. But the flip side is, and I hesitate to use this term, I think they have, in some cases, turned Torah study into idolatry. Because at a certain point, I don't believe that our job here is simply to study as much Torah as we can, get as many points as we can, then we die, we get our special place in heaven. I think Torah, at the end of the day, is a resource. It's a tool. It's our way of accessing and cultivating our wisdom to lead better lives and make a better world. And I think if the Torah study becomes only the end and never perceived as a means, I think there's a serious problem. And I think in the ultra-Orthodox world, the way that manifests itself is the investment in Torah study is so great, I think it's led to a desensitization of the connection to Jews who are not like them.
Another thing that bothers me, and not only in the ultra-Orthodox world, is that when sit in yeshiva and often study texts that from a Western viewpoint or a liberal viewpoint or whatever you want to say, texts that should be seen, can be seen as problematic. I'm interested in hearing your take on how these texts are looked at in yeshivot, and also what the value is for you and me, to you and me or our students, to be studying these texts.
So I would say two things. First of all, if one comes to their study from a perspective of my job is only to take in what's written here and assume it's true, then, and I don't care what Western civilization has to say, then there's no problem. The conflict is for those of us who are both committed to the idea that Torah is rich with wisdom, but we also believe that Western civilization has some wisdom too. And we also have a moral intuition that has some wisdom too. And I think that struggle, I think, is extremely important. First of all, I think it's important to have Torah as a balance. It's important that Torah makes us question some of the assumptions that Western civilization has about the role of humanity and how we should live. The example that comes to mind, I grew up in a culture in Glencoe, Illinois, where material success was seen as critically important. And it wasn't until I came to a yeshiva-type environment where someone challenged that and said, maybe spiritual pursuits are just as important as material pursuits. And maybe success isn't only measured by what kind of job you have or how much you earn. So that's one example. But I think fundamentally, we're not passive learners. And when these difficult texts question or come into tension with our own sense of moral intuition, I think we have to struggle with it. I think that's what the oral law is all about. We have to figure out what God wants from us. And Torah is one way to figure that out. But I think our moral sensibilities, our human relationships, is another avenue for that wisdom. And we have to figure out how to use all of it.
I would highlight maybe something from what you're saying, and that is we're not the first people to do it. The sages themselves, as you've pointed out, were also trying to understand the Torah through their moral lens. And much of what we see in the Gemara is exactly that. Which leads me on to what is a difficult question for some of us, which is questions about the Torah's origin. I remember when I was a Pardes student, I studied with a Reconstructionist rabbi, or going to be, and I often wondered, you know, what was gained and what was lost by studying with somebody who felt so differently to me on so many issues.
So I think that, are you asking about my view of the authority,
yes,
authorship,
yes,
of Torah? So
your
for
view
me,
and how it, your view, and how it affects learning, and would you learn with somebody who has very difficult, different opinions to you, and how would this enhance or lessen your learning?
So I think, first of all, my own view, I see the Torah is divine. I don't know how literally I personally need that statement to be. It doesn't bother me if Moshe had all of it, if other prophets have all of it, if Ezra put it together under prophetic guidelines. To me, that's not the main issue. But I do see that the Tetch is having a divine stamp. So what I think that means, so what does that mean coming to your second question? If I'm studying with somebody who believes they're looking at a completely human text, I would say in the end, It doesn't matter if we can agree that the text is important. If we can agree that this text has something to offer, if we can agree that there is something in our struggle with this text or what we can derive from this text that is going to be meaningful for ourselves and the Jewish people, the origin question doesn't matter. And when you think about it, most of the texts that we study are human-generated, the Talmud, the codes, the Midrashim. Regardless of what you think happened at Mount Sinai, I think we're all going to agree that those texts are human-generated. So we are dealing, when we talk about studying Torah, we are more often than not, let's say 90% of the time, talking about Torah that the Jewish people themselves created, not that God handed down to them.
This is all very exciting. It makes me want to start learning Torah and start teaching Torah. One of the fun things that I'm doing is podcasts like this. And as you know, we really, really are enhancing and building up our online learning. I'm interested as a final question for you, Tzvi, and I'll state it perhaps as a devil's advocate, is like, why isn't Elmad enough? Or do you think Elmad is enough? Or what is the value in actually learning in a real live Beit Midrash?
So first of all, I'll say I'll be very upfront. As far as I'm concerned, I would love these podcasts and Elmad to be a launching pad, not an endpoint destination. I would want all the people who are listening and reading and hearing things online to not feel, okay, I did it. I got my Jewish education for the day or the week or the month, but the opposite. I would love that it instill a desire to do more. And ultimately, for me sitting here in Jerusalem, to come and study with me here in Jerusalem in our Beit Midrash, because I think not only the issue of intensity and immersion, but the engagement of being part of a community of Torah learners is immeasurably different than what happens when you study by yourself or listening to a recording or reading something online. And I'll just illustrate this idea of immersion and continuity. You know, there's a very funny case in Tractate Bava Batra about if two owners share a slave. And now you're all thinking, oh, who should own a slave in any event? But here, you'll see as an example, even though we don't own slaves, there's something to be learned. Because the Tosfot commentary points out that if two people share a slave, there's no comparison between when the slave alternates days or when they work for a week or a month for the same owner and then they switch. That immersion and continuity count for a lot. And there is no comparison when we study Jewish texts and engage Jewish ideas. There's no comparison between doing it for an hour here or an hour there and really immersing yourself day by day, week by week, month by month that coming to a Pardes program in Israel offers. So I hope everybody listening, I hope you flood our admissions people with questions and about the way it could be possible for you to come be part of this experience here in Jerusalem.
Thank you, Tzvi, not only for today's interview, but for the other interviews as well. Please, people, stay tuned for the next in our series of This Pardes Life.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. ELMAD.pardes.org.